Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, what's up? I'm Erica Cruz Guevara, the host of The Bay. Donations keep independent journalism alive and healthy. And you support outstanding journalism when you support KQED. So if you haven't yet, check out donate.kqed.org/podcasts. That's donate.kqed.org/podcasts with an S.
From KQED.
I'm Erica Cruz Guevara, and welcome to The Bay, local news to keep you rooted. There's a queer nightlife renaissance happening in Oakland right now, and it's bringing new life to a downtown that's probably more well-known these days for store closures and fears about crime and safety. But just take a look at the growth of brick-and-mortar queer spaces, and you'll find another story.
If you go out in Oakland and meet people and are open, you really meet some of the most determined, heartfelt, and community-oriented people.
Today, I talk with KQED Arts and Culture editor Nastia Voinovskaya about Oakland's queer nightlife renaissance.
Hi, I'm Sasha Coca, host of the California Report magazine. Every week, we bring you stories about what connects us in the giant, diverse Golden State. Because what happens in California changes the world.
I love this place. We were once seen as like the place to be, California. The land of milk and honey. That's where you go to Sunshine State. But we just have challenges right now.
KQED's California Report magazine. New episodes drop every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. You get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.
Oakland always had really fun queer parties that were popular, but there were really only a couple brick and mortar options that you could visit any night of the week before the pandemic. And coming out of the pandemic, we've kind of seen this explosion of a lot of new venues. We've had, you know, cocktail lounges, clubs, bars open. So now Oakland's brick and mortar queer venues are up to 8. That's up from 2, you know, in 2020. So it's been this really amazing explosion of energy that a lot of people are calling a renaissance. Most of these venues are located walking distance from 19th Street BART and 12th Street BART, so you can really do a loop. You can start, you know, at Town Bar, for example, hit the dance floor, maybe see a little drag or one of the other events that they have going on. Then go to Fillmore and have a classy cocktail. Then you can make your way down to Querico, which is a Latin club. Right across the street from there, there's Nectar Social Club, and they have this huge, diverse array of events, art shows, open mic nights, and dance parties too.
It seems like you're describing like a scene that is not really just one thing. It's like really a diverse sort of range of like vibes and music and spaces, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. Historically, Oakland's queer scene has always been a lot more diverse than San Francisco's. I think when people think of the queer scene in San Francisco, they often think of the Castro, which for decades has been very male-oriented and also skews very white. And Oakland has always been driven by queer people of color and often Black women. With this new explosion of energy, I think it's gotten even more diverse in terms of just different events on any night of the week catering to different gender identities, but also ones that are not just segregated, but really embracing the way that people fluidly identify now.
It seems like it's not just the venues or these brick and mortars themselves, right? There's like also a plethora of programming and events that are happening in the queer nightlife scene organized by queer party promoters. Can you tell us a little bit more about the growth of that over the last year?
A lot of these promoters were here before the explosion of new venues, but now they have more places to throw events, and with that comes a diversity of more types of events. All these promoters are sort of roaming around town and activating different venues.
More so than ever, we need community, and that's what people are looking for.
Jeremy Redford, the owner of Nectar Social Club, put it really well, where he said people aren't necessarily just going out to downtown Oakland to necessarily just see what's going on, which is why it might seem more quiet or more sleepy these days, but they are really loyally following these culture makers.
So many people are following and tracking the community leaders and the community builders who they feel aligned with, and they're putting on their calendars the events that they want to go to that really resonate with them.
And I know you talked with some of the owners of these spaces. What did they tell you about why this scene seems to be growing?
Yeah, Jeremy pointed out that during the pandemic, when everything was shut down, many people had the time to think about what they really wanted to do and come up with new avenues for themselves. So just coming out of that, people are really, really hungry to express and connect.
I wanted to create a space that wasn't just a nightclub, that wasn't just a cafe, that wasn't just a small event space, that was a blank canvas and a true third space in its fullest sense, that we're open daytime to nighttime, and you can come here and do everything from launch a new creative project to chat up the bartenders and make friends, or come dance until 2 a.m. and, you know, bring out all your friends and have the time of your life.
With a lot of storefronts still sitting empty, people also ended up activating sort of unconventional spaces, like where Nectar Social Club is. It may not be, if you just looked at it, you may not see it as the typical place that would hold a bar in a venue. It's this very kind of like narrow, skinny bar, and it's very, very intimate. And with that, you know, they're able to have these more experimental events because it's a pretty small space and it can just feel very full when 50 people are there dancing.
Well, I want to talk, Nastia, more about the need that these spaces are filling. And I know you spoke with someone named Montana Hooks, who's the creator behind Queer in Oakland. Can you tell me a little bit about her and her role in the scene?
So Montana Hooks is the creator of this platform called Queer in Oakland.
As Queer in Oakland, I started throwing events probably in like 2018.
It's an online publication where she interviews and writes about queer culture makers, mostly folks of color. And then she also throws events under the Queer in Oakland banner at different venues. So those can be dance parties, artist markets. Speed dating has been a fun one because she says, you know, people are kind of sick of their phones and sick of apps.
Queer folks to date, especially if you identify as a queer femme, where, you know, you maybe when you're walking down the streets, maybe easy to blend in. And the apps were great for that. It helped solve for that problem. But at the same time, there are a lot of difficulties that come with using these apps. And I think we're experiencing phone fatigue and app fatigue.
She says that with all these new brick and mortar spaces, some of which are queer owned, but don't necessarily build themselves as exclusively queer, but that there's more visibility than there has been in a while.
And as we're becoming stronger as a queer community, I feel like that we can take up space now in ways that less marginalized communities don't even have to give a second thought.
You really see that at her events where like people are dancing and it has this very intimate energy. And she's been building a lot of really exciting momentum.
I often want to cry, and I'm not even joking, because it's just so beautiful. And I love seeing everyone's smiling faces. I love watching people meet. I love just being in the background and just seeing everyone do their thing. It's all so beautiful.
Can you tell us about your connection to Oakland and why you wanted to cover this topic?
I've been living in Oakland for all of my adult life. And as a queer person here, you know, I've been going out in the scene for that time also. And it's just been really exciting to watch all of these new venues pop up. It feels really awesome to have places that feel more inclusive, also to folks of different gender identities. And instead of kind of waiting for your favorite queer party to come around once a month or whenever it may be, it's just awesome having places to go any night of the week, and also different kinds of activities that don't just revolve around alcohol. So it just feels like the community is stronger than it has been in years and maybe in my entire, you know, decade plus here.
How are you also thinking about this story in the context of the mainstream narrative around Oakland right now?
Yeah, I mean, Oakland definitely has its challenges, and we should acknowledge that. But I do get frustrated when people just exclusively focus on this doom loop narrative, because if you go out in Oakland and meet people and are open, you really meet some of the most determined and heartfelt and community-oriented people that you will meet. There's always this really inspiring energy in Oakland where people are trying to uplift and support each other through their creative passions. And that's the thing I love most about it. Queer and trans people of color have always been leading the way in that in Oakland. So with this story, I just really wanted to pay homage to that and uplift the people that are actually making positive things happen rather than this constant negative narrative about our town.
Well, Nastia, thank you so much.
Thanks, Erica. It was great being here.
That was Nastia Voinovskaya, arts and culture editor for KQED. By the way, Nastia's got a story on kqed.org that includes a full list of venues and parties to follow and add to your party calendar. We've got a link to it in our episode notes. Make sure you check it out. This 21-minute conversation with Nastia was cut down and edited by senior editor Alan Montesilio. Maria Eskinka is our producer. She scored this episode and added all the tape. Music courtesy of the Audio Network. If you like this episode and want to support the local news that we bring here at The Bay, consider becoming a KQED member. Just go to kqed.org/donate. And I'm Erica Cruz Guevara. Thanks for listening to The Bay. Talk to you next time.
Hey, it's Avery Truffleman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts, because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.